Well, this is, anybody recognize this? Where this is? Along Lake Chelan? This is over...
Lake Shore Trail, isn't it?
Yeah, this is the Lake Shore Trail, just north of Prince Creek. And this is showing that even up here in the mountains, there's little patches of grassland. This picture, the next picture actually shows the grassland a little bit better. But you can see there's some players here. Here's ponderosa pine, our most drought-tolerant tree. And most of these are Douglas fir. When I use those names, are folks familiar with those trees? Some of them are?
Can you remind me just for a minute about Douglas fir? It's not a true fir.
It's not a true fir. It's kind of a genus by itself.
It is its own person.
Yeah. And if you go back to that diagram, the true firs are really more aligned with this northern forest.
Okay.
And that's the one thing they have in common. Where Douglas fir is really southern dryland species. So not only does it have a different name, but it's also a different ecological niche. But that's showing that it's an area that really deals with drought a lot. And the limitation in here, these little patches of grassland, is it's just too dry. The soil is thin, it's a south exposure, it dries out. The trees have a real hard time getting established there. This one shows the grasslands a little better. And, you know, if somebody wanted to occasionally focus that for me, I don't know if it needs it.
What do you think?
If you find that it looks fuzzy, unless I'll warn you that it's supposed to look fuzzy, it might sharpen up. It just shows this is a grassland, really. And these are native bunch grasses through here, which is the same species that's common over in the sagebrush steppe. But in this area, it's just found in small patches. This is bitterbrush, which is another component of that shrub steppe. That's what these are in here, too. We don't have any sagebrush growing right along the lake, but there is bitterbrush, which is a similar niche. That's what these are, right along the lake. And the lodgepole pine, ponderosa pine, our most drought-tolerant tree. And here's a couple more. Getting established. Now this one, it's underexposed, but I left it in anyway, just to show you, or to use it as a starting point. This one is pretty fuzzy. Sorry to make it get up, I don't have any way to. And it's the, this is also grassland, and this is out in the San Juan Islands. And it's there for the same reason, it's too dry for trees. And very extensive, or not very large, but very well-developed and very beautiful grasslands that occur in some of these habitats. And this is a place where I said fire is a big player. These meadows have been encroached upon and invaded by trees since since fire suppression. So. But on the east side, the sagebrush steppe is an extensive area that's dominated by plants other than trees. The only place you have trees are if you have especially large amount of moisture along some of these lakes. This is in the Grand Coulee below Dry Falls. You can have trees growing along the streams.
Are those willows?
Those are probably willows. And it's a very, this is a kind of near Ellensburg, just kind of rolling hills of sagebrush. And at a glance, if you're not familiar with the place, it seems like it's kind of a bleak country, but it's extremely diverse. So let me turn this off so it gets a little better visibility. And if you get out and look at it, especially in the spring, it can be really beautiful. The moisture is the limiting factor there, as I said, and so a lot of things flower all at once because they have a very limited amount of time when there's moisture left over from the winter. And so you get a really profuse flowering in the springtime. And these are different species of lupin. Yellow is a yellow lupin. And the bright yellow is this balsam root type of sunflower. This is also Grand Coulee. And a similar, a little closer view of some of those flowering plants. there's about a month, right around the 1st of May, you know, the last part of April, first part of May, which is really beautiful.
What was the white in the previous?
It was a lupin.
It was a white? Oh.
Yeah, it's a yellow, it's a yellowish or whitish lupin.
Okay.
Now, I put this picture in here to show you that, you notice this person's hair is being swept forward. And that's not her hairdo, but that's to show that this is a very windy place. And have any of you spent time in the sagebrush? Have been out during the spring? Some of you have?
Yeah.
It's really a, it's a really windy place, and that's part of the dryness of it. You know, sort of one thing feeds upon another, but if it's too dry for trees, then you also don't have anything to break the wind, and the wind is a contributor to the dryness. So even in the islands I was describing where those boundaries are shifting, some of the restoration efforts that people are making is to involve removal of trees so that it opens the place up to the wind again, so the wind can contribute to the dryness. But there's a lot of beautiful flowering plants in the spring. There's even cactus in Washington. We don't have what's generally considered true desert, because true desert is dominated by shrubs, and our dry lands are dominated by grasses. So technically it's not called a desert, it's called a steppe. These are all the technical terminology, and I'm not a elitist or snobbish about it. People call it a desert, it's fine with me, but just so you know that according to botanical terminology, it'd be a steppe, which is a grassland. But we have some barrel cactus. And lots of things. This is called big-headed clover. This one right here. This is called the bald stem desert parsley and or biscuit root. Those
I think I just saw that today. Copper Creek.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Copper Basin. Toward Copper Basin.
This one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, same genus, Lomatia. Yeah, it's a different species, but there's just a little bit botanical side. This is the genus Lomatia. Biscuit root or desert parsley.
And we were calling it desert parsley, but we weren't absolutely sure.
Well, no, you're probably right. There's a yellow one up there. There must be 30 or 40 species in Washington. It's a diverse, very diverse group.
Is that prickly pear?
That one that before?
No, I mean the cactus.
Cactus.
The picture before?
No, the cactus here.
Well, there isn't a cactus here.
Oh, there is.
This is clover. And these are the leaves. This is kind of a close-up, so the size is a little deceptive. But these are the leaves of this yellow flowering thing. And just the last two shots are to show you that of all the habitats in Washington, this grassland is probably the most altered. At least anywhere where the grassland has good enough soil to grow crops. The more rocky sagebrush steppe areas, which aren't fertile enough or deep enough soils to grow crops, have been grazed fairly intensely, or very intensely in most places. And that has changes, but nowhere near as profound a change as where you have agriculture. And this is an extremely rich, wheat-producing part of the world. When you think of Washington, if you don't live here, you think of coniferous forests, but a huge part of Washington is more like this. Mm-hmm. This is over in the Palouse, in the eastern, near the eastern border of Washington. Very deep, wind-deposited soil. And one of the richest wheat-producing countries, the regions around. So that's the grassland. And as we go up into the trees, this is on Lake Chelan also. This is Rattlesnake Creek, which some of you might know. Carol, you might know where Rattlesnake Creek is, but it's just north of Prince Creek. And this shows that in these grasslands, if you have a little bit more moisture, then there's enough to support trees. This is just down in one of these little draws, and there's a little creek in there, and because of that moisture, trees are able to grow in there as a very limited size forest. Most of that is big leaf maple down in there. But then we come up into the forest. You'll find that most of the photos I'm going to show you are not in the forest, even though most of the vegetation is forest. Most of the surface area in the mountains is forest. It's because most of, it's kind of the same thing, the sagebrush and the alpine are so beautiful because of their flowering, you know, that short season, everything happening at once, that's where the photos tend to be taken. So there's a few shots of the forest. And this would be that temperate forest. This could be, this isn't around Holden. I think this is on the Lakeshore Trail. But this could just as well be Holden, same species. This is Douglas fir, your most common conifer. And there's probably a subalpine fir growing there. But that temperate coniferous forest. And a little more moisture, this is another example of that temperate forest. These are western red cedar. And there are also our oldest or longest lived conifer. They grow upwards of 1,000 years. This one, this is probably Douglas fir right here. Western red cedar with a fibrous bark, and Douglas fir with very deeply furrowed bark when they get big. And this is another very dry site, Douglas fir forest. Oh, that's much better. Now this is probably a good place to talk just a little bit about succession. And basically succession is a series of changes that happen in the vegetation. When you have, you can imagine starting with bare ground, like say after a fire, for example. And those conditions in that dry ground are full sunlight. If it's been a hot fire, it might be mineral soil, full exposure to wind, drying out conditions. And there are certain species that are able to establish in those conditions. And one of those is this Douglas fir. But as soon as you have that forest, that Douglas fir grow up and start to develop into a forest like you have here, conditions are totally different. Now you have shade. Instead of mineral soil, you start to have organic material on the surface. And you're not so susceptible to the wind. And so Douglas fir is not able to seed itself in again in its own shape. And so you have a second wave of species that appear under that canopy. And on our side of the mountains, the most common is western hemlock. You know, low elevation Douglas fir, in low elevation Douglas fir forest, you have this early pioneer stand of Douglas fir, and then it's replaced through this process of succession by western hemlock. And if in your imagination you can see that Douglas fir eventually dying out and those hemlocks growing up and being big trees, then instead of Douglas fir forest you have a hemlock forest. And hemlock is able to seed itself in the shade, so it's able to replace itself.
Now, Doug fir, I'm not understanding enough to know why Doug fir can't do that.
Well, it's just what its own particular requirements are. The conditions that it's a
seed.
It doesn't grow well in the shade. It doesn't germinate.
Okay.
Even though it produces lots of seeds and you have these big trees. And in this part of the country, where we're sitting right here, it's a similar story. Douglas fir gets established after a fire, or lodgepole pine gets established after a fire. They're both adapted to coming in open conditions like that. But under their own shade,
species of fir come in, like silver fir or subalpine fir, and replace it. So if you walk around in a forest with a lot of Douglas fir, you won't see usually young Doug fir. You'll see other species starting to replace it. So that's what the term succession means, is that those waves of different species.
Joe?
Yeah.
Is that what's happened after Mount St. Helens?
Yeah, that's an even more dramatic case, because you've had, in some cases, not only the vegetation removed, but you've got deposition of new material, like not even soil. So, but the same process would happen if you have establishment of species like Douglas fir or lodgepole pine are able to establish themselves in that full sunlight. And eventually, but it's going to take a long time, you're going to have to replace them by shade-tolerant species. Well, same zone, temperate zone, temperate forest, and if there's places where there's more moisture, then you might have small pockets of quaking aspen, which is what this is. This is over Long Lake Chelan. You know that dry pine Douglas fir forest, get a little seepage of moisture and get a stand of quaking aspen. Then, if you go up past that transition, we get into this northern or boreal forest, or upper montane forest, would be called. And we have different species of spruce and fir. And this is a Engelmann spruce forest, really upper montane forest, over across the lake. This is a mountain hemlock forest. I put this in because on the western slope, this upper montane forest would be mountain hemlock. This is actually a photo from Alaska, so it's a little bit of a misrepresentation, but I wanted to show you what mountain hemlock forest looks like when it's a closed forest. This is over above Surprise Lake on the other side of Lake Chelan also. And this is one of two patches of mountain hemlock that I know of that occur on that side of the lake. And this would be a remnant of a period of time when it was cooler. And mountain hemlock, if it was cooler, moister, mountain hemlock would be able to spread to the east. And then as the climate became hotter and drier again, in most places that hemlock would die off or be squeezed out. But here's a little north-facing, it's a steep north-facing slope, where a lot of snow accumulates, it's got a lot more moisture, and so the mountain hemlock's been able to hang on. You can see, you know, this is mountain hemlock, but most of the trees down here are subalpine fir. And I just threw this in because botanists always have to put up with wildlife. The wildlife always upstages botany. It's more interesting. It's a little camp robber. Or they move, so you have to pay attention right now because in a minute it's going to be gone. There he goes. So this is also, this is a little overexposed, but I wanted to include it because this is Miner's Ridge. And as you come out of that forest, that upper forest, or boreal forest, you come into these subalpine meadows, which are caused by snowpack. Snowpack is what keeps the trees out. And you'll see that it's still below the limit of where trees are possible, because here's a tree right here. So why aren't there trees all over this slope? And the answer that plant ecologists give is that the snowpack doesn't allow the trees to get established. And so you get this profuse flowering of herbaceous species. And you'll see that where the trees are is where there's promontories, places that would melt out first. The wind would blow the snow off and things could get established. See where the trees are? Where if the problem was moisture, like out in the sagebrush steppe, the trees would be down in the hollows, or down in the depressions where the moisture was more available. So that's looking toward, I think that's Mount Plummer at the end of Miner's Ridge. This is another shot of that same type of habitat, subalpine, the subalpine zone. And this is Lake Juanita over on, also on Lake, on Sawtooth Ridge, but our west, our east side subalpine species, this is a larch, subalpine larch. And there's probably subalpine fir, that's probably what this is right here. Interspersed with grasslands, with meadows, herbaceous meadows. And you can see here again, the trees are growing up on the, there's a little knoll there. And that's where the trees have gotten established, or even up on the ridge. But down here where the snowpack is, the trees haven't been able to get established. Now this is a dynamic, the lines here are dynamic, and as I've been describing these climatic changes that have given, that have caused these zones to shift around, but there's a fairly recent historic event which we all have heard about, and some people probably remember it, is during the Dust Bowl era, where we had a series of hot, dry years. And throughout the Cascades, there's a lot of documentation of invasion of these subalpine meadows during those years. That when you had a series of hot, dry years, trees were able to get established. And you'll see fairly extensive stands of youngish conifers occupying these meadows. And those have been dated back to these Dust Bowl years. This is another picture of subalpine. This is Image Lake, looking toward Glacier Pool. So this kind of shows that those waves of climatic change, because these are all young larches growing through here. And people have told me, and there's been research done in the Cascades, that these would date back to the Dust Bowl. This is a snag from an old larch that obviously was quite old when it died, and it's probably been standing there for quite a long time too. So it's, I view that as a relic of a period when the climate was warmer.
Is that one the one that's on the way up to Copper Basin?
No, I think this is over on Sawtooth Ridge.
There's a beautiful old...
Is there one up there too?
Yeah. Broken, kind of like, it looks a lot like...
Yeah, it's amazing, you know, if you're...
And it's living, though. Is this one living?
No, this one is totally dead.
No, it's actually living. It's quite interesting.
This is a whitebark pine. If you go to tree line here, in this part of the mountains, the two species are larch, like the one, the previous photo, and this one is whitebark pine. This is also on a ridge top, and it's also dead.
Are they often sort of low and shrubby, whitebark pine?
Yeah, whitebark pine is often quite shrubby.
And is that the species that they found to be very old out in California?
Well, the oldest one is bristlecone pine. But this whitebark is sort of our, it's the North Cascades version of bristlecone. Because it's the, well, it's, it grows in a similar habitat. At the limit of tree growth, grows very,
very
slowly.
Very slowly, yeah.
So that's the limit, that's sort of leaving trees. And this is showing the entry into that alpine. The alpine zone, which is, there's still a couple of upright trees there, so it's not pure alpine yet. But this vegetation is what the alpine looks like. That all the herbaceous growth is a lot more sparse than those lush subalpine meadows. Very much reduced in size. You know, the quintessential alpine species are miniature. This is a willow. And In the Arctic and in the alpine, there's numerous species of willow, which are an inch or two high. And these are the clusters of flowers of the willow. It's called net-leaf willow. This is another one. This is a species of lupin right here. It's probably a couple inches tall. The lupin might be 3 or 4 inches tall. But. And this is Moss campion. It's the classic Arctic and alpine cushion plant. It might be an inch tall, and it might look like a clump of moss, really, but it's a flowering plant and it grows close to the ground, so it can get out of that, out of the wind and close to the warmth that's close to the ground. It's all about having enough warmth during the growing season. Seems like plants are able to adapt to severe cold without a problem during the dormant period. But it's during the summer when they need heat, a certain amount of heat in order to grow. This is another one. This is a type of lupin. The common name for this is actually prairie lupin, because it's a variety of a species that grows down in sagebrush and in the prairies as well as up in the alpine bush. It's not considered the same variety, but it's considered the same species. And this, I like to put this in because this is a plant called Smolowskia, and that's its only name. It's both its common name and its scientific name. And it's the species that grows at the highest elevation in the North Cascades, in my experience. At least the two volcanoes I've gone up where I got beyond any flowering plants at all, this was always the last one. So it's the survivor, Smolowskia, named after a botanist named Smolowskia, I guess. And this is called Douglasia novalis, which is named after David Douglas, who was a Scottish botanist that did a lot of exploring in this area. So those are alpine species, and this is just a shot of what some of that alpine habitat looks like. This is Burroughs Mountain, looking at Mount Rainier. And Burroughs Mountain is the most extensive area of alpine vegetation in Washington. And this is another one closer to home. This is from North Star Peak, looking over at Glacier Peak. And you can see this is Plummer, which is the mountain we were looking at from the other side, down Miner's Ridge. But you can see it's pretty dark in this part of the photo, but that you get beyond the forest and then into this area, which is all this subalpine meadows, and then you get up above a certain point where there's no tree growth. And this is I'll leave you on this photo. This is a cloudy pass right here, right at the head of the valley here. This is up on a cloudy peak, kind of looking down over the pass. This is Glacier Peak. You can see it here. This is the subalpine meadows. This is the forest. And then this kind of vegetation up here, this is above the tree growth into the alpine. So that's the last photo.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, I came across that. I put it in actually to show my wife because she loves Glacier Peak. And it's a great view right there.
Is Surprise Lake off of the Summit Trail?
Yeah, it's it's to the west of the Summit Trail.
To the west. Okay.
But it isn't very far from it.
Okay. Right, the Summit Trail.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I've been on the Summit Trail dozens of times.
Yeah.
Where I usually have gone is only as far north as the headwaters of Prince Creek.
Oh, okay.
And Surprise Lake is the next one over.
Yeah.
Have you been to Indian Head Basin up there?
Yeah, I have.
That's a beautiful.
It is a beautiful.
Beautiful meadow.
Yeah, that. if you go over the ridge above Indian Head, mm-hmm. you get to the Cascade Basin, mm-hmm. and you can look down on Lake Chelan from there.
There's a pass up there as you're getting toward Tehachapi called. Freak Out Pass.
Oh, I
guess about what era that was named.
Yeah.
And it truly is Freak Out Pass. You can see virtually every every Northwest volcano
yeah.
from there in 360 degrees. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, it's spectacular picture up there.
Well, that's the tour of the vegetation zones of North Cascades.
Thank you. Very generous.
Be happy to entertain any questions you might have. Have you folks been up there in the upper elevations there? I know that you have, and I know that you have. Well, part of my motivation for the slides in was that everybody can't get up there, so at least you can get a,
yeah, this was a great
a little
visit.
Bit of a glimpse
of. A great visit.
Great.
I haven't been in the Alpine to speak of anywhere.
Oh, is that right?
Or all that much in the subalpine.
Yeah, of course, the subalpine is a lot of those parklands that attract people. Mm-hmm. I've always been attracted to the alpine.
Yeah, the amazing miniature plants that are the same plant, but they're only an inch or 2 inches tall.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing.
Or they're
the size difference.
If they're not exactly the same, they're derived from.
Or they're derived, probably.
From species that grew.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Lower elevation. Yeah. There's you know, the derivation of the alpine flora is an interesting topic because some of the species have come from the north. They're Arctic species.
Uh-huh.
And then there's others that have come out of the forest. You know, they've been growing adjacent to that and have adapted to those conditions and have been able to move into the alpine.
Oh.
And then there's others. Quite a few that are sagebrush or desert species that have been, because the conditions are somewhat, some of the limiting factors are similar.
Uh-huh.
A lot of desiccation to contend with in the alpine.
Yeah, what about the alpine succulent plants? There's an area I go to north of here, one side of the reach is very dry and has these succulent plants grow
like stone crop.
Sparse and there's a lot of sandiness there.
Oh yeah.
You know where you can find beautiful stone crop around here? If you go to Monkey Bear Falls and then go up, you know, just climb on up there, go up around across the creek above the falls, and back down alongside the falls. On the other side, there's beautiful stone crop. I'm glad we don't have a trail today.
Oh, okay.
Because there's incredible plants there.
Oh, just
quite,
there today, yeah.
Quite different.
This is all about 8,500 feet. It's pretty high. True alpine.
Yeah, or it's not that high. It's more like 7,500.
What?
You start hitting alpine.
Okay.
Like the first picture I showed of the, let me turn this fan off. The first picture I showed you of the alpine is on South Navarre, and it's South Navarre, North Navarre, I remember. And it's I think it's like 7,200. So anyway, well, thank you for coming.
Thank you. You can identify. I'm calling it Clintonia anemisius. It's the three leaves.
The lily, the girl.